Push the button there. Let us stay. All right. Welcome to the Sunday night There Is a Solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. Visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed are those of OA, individual OA members, and do not represent OA as a whole. So I'd like now to introduce our speaker, a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence. She has recovered through the directions in the Big Book and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After she shares, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what she has shared. Please help me welcome Steph Brown, a compulsive overeater from Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Welcome, Steph. Take it away.
Hi, everyone. My name is Steph, and I'm a compulsive overeater. Thank you for asking me to come to this meeting. I love the fact that we have a newcomers meeting. And I remember being a newcomer like it was yesterday. And it was actually my very first OA meeting was, June 12th, 2011. So I have been in program for 11 and a half years. And this week I celebrated 7 years of abstinence, October 12th. I know we are supposed to talk about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And I'll tie that into how recovery has worked using the 12 steps for everybody. But what I want to say is this is a program where the steps are everything, because I had 4 years. I walked in the doors and I was gifted with the gift of abstinence the day I walked in the doors. And I had 4 years of abstinence under my belt. And I went traveling and I didn't work my program while I was gone. I didn't work the 12 steps and I didn't stay close to my higher power. And I literally gave my abstinence away. I had the biggest binge in Scotland that I've ever had in my life. So just a reminder that, you know, this is a program of recovery and I have a great deal of days behind me, but it truly is one step at a time and one day at a time. So what I would like to do first is, I always find when I was new to program that pictures helped, because it was really difficult. I found when I walked into the rooms, I walked into a room of people who were normal sized bodies. And I was like, what am I doing here? You know, I was very overweight, very unhappy, and very living by binging. And so I just, for a visual, I don't know if you can see this or if the glare is too much, but that was me before I came into the rooms. At my heaviest, I was 353 pounds and I'm maintaining a weight loss of about 165 pounds right now. And I've been within the same 10 pound range for 10 years, 8 years, maybe 8 years, let's say. But that's a gift from my higher power. And that's something I don't take for granted, because it allows me the ability to continue living and continue working program. Because if I was living how I was living before, I would be dead by now, I'm sure. So what it was like, I was raised in diet culture. My mother was overweight and she was a yo-yo dieter. I knew how to count calories before I knew how to do multiplication tables. And we had our list of food on the table that we ate every day and tracked our calories and our carbohydrates. And this was in the early 70s. I was born in 65. So, and I started dieting, or started being forced to diet, when I was about six. So that tells you how long I have been not only a compulsive overeater, but somebody like paying attention to that. It was difficult because I had a brother who was athletic and I had a father who was an average body size, but my mother and I struggled. And so I was raised very focused on food and very shamed about what I was eating. And, you know, I heard all of the things we've all heard before. Oh, you have such a pretty face. Oh, if you'd only lose a little bit of weight. Oh, if you do this. Oh, if you do that. And it's toxic. That kind of talk is toxic, and it's incredibly toxic to children, because I learned from an early age that I wasn't good enough, that I wasn't good enough. I wasn't skinny enough. I wasn't pretty enough because I wasn't skinny enough. Nobody would ever love me because I was fat, you know? And that just made me hide my eating. And my eating was problematic from the time I remember being at my cottage and hiding in the bathroom, because that's where the pantry was, and eating all the food so that nobody would see me do it. And I was 6 or 7 or 8 years old. Like, this disease starts young for some of us. And, you know, I will never not be a compulsive overeater. And in my life, I'm 57 years old now. In my life, I have spent decades and decades going from overeating to dieting, restricting, binging, purging. And although I qualify as a bulimic and anorexic, as well as a compulsive overeater, food is always the thing for me, because the you know, starving myself and binging and purging, I mean, the purging and the starving myself was always a result of binging. So the binging is my biggest problem. And I still am, you know, I still think like somebody who has a binge eating issue, because I binge other things in my life as well. You know, I'm sort of all or nothing. And that's I think, pretty normal for people who are in this program or people who need this program, because I think a lot of us are very all or nothing. And if I couldn't have it all, I felt like I didn't have enough. And that was also toxic thinking for me. So when I remember the very last day of binging was June 11th, 2011. And I had spent the evening with 4 of my dearest, closest friends. And all I could think about, they lived downstairs from me. And we had a dinner. And I hardly ate any of the food, because all I could think about was all the binge foods that I had upstairs waiting for me. So I tapped out. I said, sorry, I'm not feeling well. I have to go home. And I went upstairs and I went into my kitchen and I grabbed some of everything and I brought it in my bedroom and I put it on the bed and I closed the door and I ate and ate and ate and cried and cried and cried and went on my laptop and looked up Overeaters Anonymous. And the next day I went to my first meeting, and that was the Sunday night meeting at Runnymede, which is my home meeting. And that's the one that starts at 7:30. Actually, it's starting right now. And I'm usually there, but I'm here tonight. When I walked into those rooms, you know, I met a number of really lovely, lovely people who told me that there was a solution. And I didn't believe them. I had done every diet. I had been in pay and weigh programs. I had, you know, my mother had me on this and that. And I thought I had tried everything. But I was desperate, because I could not believe that I had walked out on all of my dearest friends so that I could go upstairs and eat garbage, you know? So when I went to that meeting, I didn't think that I would fit in. You know, I am visibly queer. I have blue hair. I have lots of tattoos. And I walked in and I saw a bunch of people who I would think were like, you know, middle-class white moms. And I was like, these aren't my people. And they all had regular bodies, not like mine. And so I said, well, I'll sit through the meeting. I promised myself I'll sit through this meeting. And we read the big book, and the big book talked a lot about God. And I was like, oh, this is definitely not the program for me. I struggle with that concept so much. But I was open because I was desperate. And then the sharing came. And each one of those people in that meeting shared something that was like a knife to my heart. Like they were talking about me. They were talking about my life, you know? And I still remember to this day, one of the women saying something about how they had a 9-month-old son, and the son was unwell and crying. And all they could think about was how the son was bothering them and getting in their way of ruining their day, and how selfish and self-centered that was. And I was just like, that's me. Like, that is the person I am. I pretend to be all like happiness and sunshine to people, but when they drive me crazy, like, I can't tolerate it. And it's all about me. I'm like, you're getting in my way. And when I heard that, I thought, I can't live like this, you know, but it's so lovely to hear other people who are having the same feelings and experiences. And then when the meeting ended, they came up and they started talking to me about the steps and abstinence and just give it 6 meetings, you know, just try for 6 meetings, see what you think. And they were so welcoming. And I thought, okay, you know, if nothing else, I'm going to come back just because these people are also wonderful and lovely. And I had promised myself that day that I was going to an OA meeting, so I was not going to binge. So I'd eaten healthy food all day in moderate amounts. And I made it that night because I wanted to, they talked about 24 hours and I'm like, I can do 24 hours. So I made it through my first 24 hours. And that to me was a miracle because it had been so long since I hadn't eaten ridiculous amounts of food. So that was really helpful that I got through that one day and I met these really lovely people. But then I was committed. I'm like, okay, here's a program that I know works. They all talk about it. So I have to believe it. So now I have to figure out how to deal with like the issue of the God word. So the next meeting I went to, I had conversations about with that with people. And they made it very clear to me that it didn't have to be capital G God. It didn't have to be the God of a church. It could be something bigger than myself. And I have a history in Wicca. I don't know if you know what Wicca is, but paganism, it's a belief in many gods as opposed to one God. And it's a nature-based belief. And I'm like, well, I know nature is bigger than me. So I'm going to go with nature as my higher power for now and see how that works. So I was going to just try it. So then I started working the steps. I didn't have a sponsor. I just knew I had to do something. So I bought the OA 12 and 12 and I read it. I went to so many meetings every week. I went to step meetings. I went to big book meetings. And through the step meetings, I was really able to sort of get a handle on how to work the steps. But a couple of months passed and I was doing step one great. I was doing step two great because that's what got me in the rooms in the first place. So step two, you know, coming to believe, I was like, okay, I can come to believe that something, because I can't do this. So I believe this is a process and I can do this. But then that was in June, July, August, and I was still abstinent and I was terrified because I went to one meeting and we kept reading out of the relapse book once a month. And at the end of one of those meetings, I was crying and I was like, I am so scared that I'm going to lose my abstinence. And this person was talking to me and she said, do you have a sponsor? And I said, no, I don't know how to get a sponsor. And she said, find someone who has what you want and ask how they got it. And I said, I tried that. And she said, did you ask anybody to sponsor you? And I said, no. She said, well, why don't you ask someone to sponsor you? And I said, what if they say no? And she said, then you ask someone else. So I was being kind of, I don't know, silly. And I just looked at her and said, okay, fine. Will you sponsor me? And she said, absolutely. So there I was. And suddenly I had a sponsor and I didn't know what to do with that. And that meant now I had to commit to working the steps because I was dancing with the steps. I was doing, I'm sure some of you heard of the step 1, 2, 3 waltz, but I wasn't doing step 4 or step 5 or all the rest. And now things were getting serious, but now I had somebody to talk to about all of my fears and, you know, about how afraid I was of losing my abstinence. And it was great. I had that sponsor for several years and she walked me through the steps. And I can tell you now that the steps have become just like a huge part of my life. Sorry, one sec. That's very noisy. Sorry, I have a roommate who has headphones on and can't hear herself. So the working of the steps was, she wanted me to get through them quickly. And there were some really difficult parts of working the steps. But what I can tell you is every step I took, every time I worked through the steps, my abstinence got more solid, my confidence in the program got more solid, but most importantly, my relationship with my higher power was really, really like mind blowing. I was at a retreat shortly after getting her as a sponsor. I was at a retreat and I was working on step 3 and everybody kept talking about surrender, surrender. And I didn't understand that. I'm like, how do you surrender? Like how, I don't want, you know, I'm a self-will run riot. I didn't want to surrender. So I went out and I sat in the woods And I just got, somebody said to me, get on your knees. And so I took them very literally. And I went out into the woods and I got on my knees and I sat down and I said, universe, I surrender. I don't know what else to say. I don't know what to do, but I need you to help me. So I surrender my will and my life to you. And out of nowhere, there was this huge gust of wind and the trees started shaking and leaves were coming down around me. And I was like, oh, wow, that worked. That was kind of scary. But it was life-changing because suddenly I realized there is something listening to me and there is a power greater than me that wants me to be okay and will love me through that process. So that was a changing day for me because I suddenly was able to use the word God and not cringe. And I was able to use the word God and know that I'm really just talking to the universe. And it doesn't have to be, you know, a particular thing. It can be whatever I need it to be in that moment. My God is ever changing. And that was so important for me to be able to work the rest of my steps, was to be able to do step three confidently and know that I really had a God of my understanding that had my back. Because then that was probably the hardest step for me because I struggled with the idea of God. So then I was able to start working the rest of the steps. And I don't know how familiar, I know this is a newcomer meeting, but if everybody's familiar with the steps, step 4 to 9 is a lot of hard work and you have to really face a lot of your own personal demons. You know, so step 4, you're doing your personal inventory, a searching and thorough inventory. And I had to go back into parts of my life that I was not ever wanting to revisit. And I had to go and face things that had terrified me or upset me or scared me or hurts and traumas that I carried within me. And those things are really hard. And I know so many people who have gotten to step 4 and lost their abstinence. And I was committed to not being one of those people. So I was going to forge on through no matter how difficult it was. And so just for context, I mentioned that I'm queer. My parents were hippies. I have a weird life. I've had a weird life. My sponsor came from a fundamentalist Christian background. She was straight. She was very conservative. I was terrified of giving away, like doing my step 5 and telling her the things from my past. I was terrified. So I was very honest with her about that. And I said, I just need you to know that you're going to hear some things that might make your toes curl, you know? And she was like, I'm going to hear it and I'm going to forget about it because my higher power gives me the gift of listening to you and then not remembering it after. And she said, this is a place of non-judgment. This is a conversation between you and God. I'm just a listener. And I was like, okay. So I went through the whole thing. It was the good, the bad, the ugly. And we were together for, gosh, I don't even know, like probably 4 hours talking about this stuff. And when I finished, we were at a place in downtown Toronto. And when I left that building, I walked outside and I, you know, Toronto can be pretty oppressive at times and it makes you feel crowded and heavy. And I walked outside and I just suddenly felt so light. I felt light and airy, like the weight of a lifetime of things had just been lifted. And that was such an amazing gift that I thought, I have to just keep this going because I feel so different. You know, I didn't feel healed or perfect. I felt different. And that was amazing because there's still a process. I still have to do 7, 8, 9, you know, or 6, 7, 8, 9. So from there, I was able to sort of go into the rest without fear because the one that had been really frightening for me was over. And I could move forward. So moving into steps, you know, 6 and 7 were fast and furious. 8 and 9 again terrified me because in 8 and 9, you're acknowledging who you have to make amends to and making amends. And I had some things that I did when I was younger that, you know, could have put me in jail. And I was terrified. I stole from an employer and I had to go to that employer and own that. But if I didn't do it, I would still be carrying that today. It would still be a point of shame, you know? And the 12 steps, what they really help you do is they help you get rid of that shame, all the stuff that makes you eat, all the stuff that drives you to your addictive behaviors. It helps you get rid of that, and it helps you know that you're not alone in that struggle and in that fight, and that you're human and that you've made mistakes. And we've all made mistakes, but today we don't have to. And today we can live a different life. And I think that that's what I just carried with me when I did it, my steps 8 and 9, because going through those, all of the stuff, you know, the thing is, when I was working through the steps, I didn't get all the way through the steps probably for about a year, but I started to live the steps every day as I knew what was coming up, because I was thinking proactively, right? Really, I was like, oh, I don't want to have to do a step 9 about this later, or step 8 or 9 about this later. So I'm just going to like apologize right now, or I'm not going to be a jerk right now because I don't want to have to deal with it in my steps. And it really made me rethink about how I walk through my day every day. And the person who I relied on the most through that time was my higher power. And I still, so many times a day, I check in with my higher power and I say, is this the right thing that I should be doing? You know, is this how I should be acting? Am I making the right decision? Give me a sign, give me, you know, guide my actions, guide my words. And it's, I do it just day to day. I manage a retail environment. When I have to deal with cranky customers, I say a little prayer for them, you know, because that way I know that I'm not going to act out and I'm not going to have to do a step 8 and 9 later on for it, or a step 4, 5, 8, 9, you know. It's, so the steps, you know, I could go in detail about each step, but I don't think that that's how I want to deliver this. I think what I want to deliver this is that you do the steps once, but then you do them every day and you live the steps, because this is a program of living. It's not something you do once and then stop doing. You know, your step, you know, 10, 11, and 12 is an ongoing daily sort of movement forward that you're going to be doing, because you have to reflect on your day. You have to, you know, revisit with your higher power, whoever that turns out to be. You have to carry the message and share it with other people. That's the foundation of this program. If people hadn't done that with me the very first day I walked in the doors, if they hadn't, you know, 12-step me after the meeting and come and talk to me about it and shared their experience, strength, and hope, I wouldn't have come back, because I was like, I am nothing like these people. But in the way they spoke to me and the way the stories they told, and every meeting I went to after that, you know, I hear how other people work the steps, and I hear, you know, there are people who are very like diligent about doing a structured program every day. There are people who just do it sort of willy-nilly. There are people who, like me, I try to live it. So I might not be sitting down and writing out step 4s and 5s every day, but I'm doing them, because I'm doing them as they happen, because that is now how I live my life, and it stops me from binging and it keeps me closer to God. And if I'm not doing those things, my life is out of whack. It's out of order. The food becomes louder. You know, I can say that my food is in a peaceful place now. I eat mostly like a normal person. And I say normal, you know, with air quotes around it. But I haven't binged since Scotland 7 years ago, you know, and I haven't wanted to. I can have food in my house that there was a time that I couldn't have it in my house. I have friends who come over and say, like, I don't know how you keep XYZ here, because it would all be gone. There are a few foods I have not eaten since June 11th, 2012. I mean, 2011, because those are my red light foods and they always lead to a binge. I know I can't eat them. The program asks us to be honest, you know? And I have to be honest. There's a certain food that I will not eat today. I won't eat tomorrow. Hopefully I won't ever want to eat it again, because if I do, I know that it's game over. But the only thing that stops me from eating that food is this program. What I did want to say about the 12 steps is, to my recovery, the most important part is in chapter 5 and how it works. And it is this phrase: half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. That in the entire big book is my favorite passage, because that's what kept me going through the first year. It's on page 59, if anybody's interested. And when I got my first year, my medallion in 2012, my 1 year medallion, to celebrate that, I actually went and had "We Stood at the Turning Point" tattooed on my arm. Because to me, that's what step work is about. It's about standing at the turning point. You have a choice. We all have a choice. The choice is, am I going to work my program or am I not going to work my program? And am I going to hand this over to God or am I going to think that I have it? Am I going to talk about my part in this discomfort? Or am I going to pretend that I have no responsibility at all and blame somebody else? You know, these are all turning points that we come to every day. And standing at that turning point, the flip side of that is I can go some one way or another. But if I go by myself, I'm still that I'm still guiding myself. I'm not asking God for help. But if I stand at that turning point and ask for protection and care with complete abandon, then I know that the answer and the guidance that I'm going to get is going to lead me in the direction I need to go. You know, the steps are a roadmap. That's what they are. They tell us, here are 12 things you should do on a daily basis to refrain from, for us, compulsive overeating or binging or anorexia or bulimia, whatever our problem with food is. But the answer is in the steps, and the steps all lead you to God. And the other thing that I think is so important that has been pointed out to me time and again, and I always have to remember it, is that the steps all talk about we. They don't talk about I, right? And I hope we've all heard this before, but just as a reminder, we admitted we were powerless. I didn't admit I was powerless. We admitted we were powerless. You know, it's so important to remember that this is a fellowship, and it's through sharing our stories and sharing our experience, strength, and hope, sharing our difficulties and our issues, and being honest about who we are and where we're at with other fellows and with our higher power that's going to keep us in a better place. And I think that's all I have to say right now. I hope everybody heard something they needed to hear today.
Thank you so much, Steph. That was just absolutely right on.